you voting for?
Oh, I've already voted.
What do you mean you've already voted?
I've already voted.
The election isn't until November.
No, no, no. Not that kind of vote. I voted with my money.
Really?
Oh, yes. These days people don't vote. Money does. You see, Bush and Gore need tons of cash to run for office. We've got it. And we can get it to them. It's all completely legal. And in exchange, they basically set their policy agendas around our needs. Both of them. It's much more cost-effective.
What if you don't have that kind of cash?
Oh, it's okay. Just wait till November.
Paid for by billionaires for Bush or Gore. Because it doesn't really matter who you vote for. We've already bought them. www.billionairesforbushorgore.com.
Billionaires for Bush and More is the name of the CD which gave us those songs, both Toys for the World and Money Votes, a campaign ad that was used by Billionaires for Bush or Gore. We're approaching the 4 o'clock hour, another 2 hours expected of radio broadcast. We're coming to you from the trenches. This is Chicago Indie Media's continuing coverage of protests and events in Chicago and worldwide. Today, March 19th, 2005, the second anniversary of the escalation of the war in Iraq. This radio broadcast is a special extended edition of From the Trenches, the radio project of the Chicago Independent Media Center, part of the growing network of independent media centers that span the globe. My name is Mitchell Strapanchik. Thank you very much for joining us. Phone number to call in if you'd like to join in, or if you have a dispatch to share, 773-384-8544, imc-chicago@indymedia.org, or is the email that you can email us. You can also send us an AOL instant message. Chicago IMC is the name of the Chicago Indie Media messenger list that we have. I thought I was going to send an email, but bear with me for a moment, folks. So what's new there? Reigniting the anti-war movement. Well, the anti-war movement's being reignited. That's not the issue, but I'm just wondering about other efforts. That was a really cool speech by Cynthia McKinney, I should say. And we had heard it in its entirety, insofar as we were able to actually get it on the air. Hopefully it did. I was able to hear it through the headphones. It stands to reason that other people were as well. So that worked. Hurrah, hurrah. Protest on commondreams.org. Counter-recruitment effort. Bring the National Guard home. Bring the cost of war home. Other efforts pertaining to that. Afghanistan, in one headline, is listed as one huge U.S. jail, according to The Guardian. Afghanistan, the hub of a global network of detention centers, the front line in America's war on terror. War on terror. Yeah.
But they said, though, and I'm listening to them talking, they said that the best they've heard is 1,000 people in Miami.
Best if our number of people involved,
yes,
in marches?
Right.
Yeah, we don't have confirmed numbers here in Chicago. We may exceed that as far as number of people at the rally because it was packed. And we figure at least 1,000, probably more. Unfortunately, we don't have any numbers. We'll probably ask for estimates when people call in. And we encourage you to call in, 773-384-8544. You can also email us, imc-chicago@indymedia.org. Clarification point. I just saw a dispatch on IMC. IndieMedia.us is listing a listing of M19 breaking news. Intimidating police presence at Chicago rally, reports of police harassing journalists. Clarification, we're pleading ignorant on that. We don't know if that was a journalist. It could have just been some random guy with a camera. Thousands of police are starting the march in San Francisco. But in any event, that's multiple marches and arrests in Chicago. So that's the state of affairs now. I'll have to take a while to just digest it all with the protest. A rally in Miami. This is what was alluded to. Some 1,000 people, according to Miami Indie Media. Miami being an infamous home of the Free Trade Area of the Americas protest. Conversations with the cabinet. What do we have? No details yet. We see an article. I'm looking at this. No, I don't see it anywhere on the Miami Indie Media website. Yeah, upcoming events. Very slickly designed website, but I don't see any details. Yeah, intimidating police presence at Chicago rally, reports of police harassing journalists. It wasn't a journalist, it was a random photographer. Uh, 4:05 p.m., actions in Portland are underway. Let's go there now. Portland, actually, indiemedia.org. Listen live now. Actually, what I might do, see if I can replay this. I wonder if I can get the live stream on the broadcast. Let's try. We're going to listen to Portland Indie Media's web stream if it turns out that there's interesting developments with regards to actions there. Since I'm kind of, I need a break, but I want to get some new content out there. So we shall see. Hold your breath, folks. Hello? iTunes just came up on my laptop, but no details otherwise. Hello? Hello? Anything else? It doesn't look like it. Yeah, sure.
That's the same as
that. Yeah, they should be the same. Microtel. Why isn't it playing? Okay, so much for the idea there. Having trouble? Click here. I think I will. It's Winamp. The Windows Media Mangler. Oh, well, that explains it. Well, so much for that. Maybe we can do some re-airing of such things. San Diego was having, let's see if we can listen in on that. We're going to San Diego now, folks. Radio. Actually going to indiemedia.us to find out the latest there. Radioactive radio out of radioactive.org. All coverage of anti-war marches. National coverage. Listen. Well, let's listen. Well, I can hear it through my headphones, but I can't get it over the web stream. And I'd have to actually stop the broadcast and then restart, and I don't want to do that. So as much as I would like to, I won't do that as such. So bye-bye, iTunes. Broadcast is continuing otherwise. And we're continuing from the trenches. This is Chicago Indie Media's continuing coverage of protests and events in Chicago and worldwide today, March 19th, 2005. Part of the second anniversary of events occurring across the country and around the world, and the escalation of protests in against the war in Iraq and elsewhere. This radio broadcast is a special extended edition of From the Trenches, the radio project of the Chicago Independent Media Center, part of the growing network of independent media centers that span the globe.
And the CD just got on.
My name is Mitchell Stepinchik. I've been on the air off and on for now 8 hours and 11 minutes. Wow, it seems like I just started. Phone number to call, and we've got the line free, 773-384-8544. imc-chicago@indymedia.org is the email. You can email us. And Chicago IMC is the AOL Instant Message Messenger account. Let's listen to the phone call. Chicago Indie Media, you're on the air and being recorded. Go ahead, please.
This is IP Relay Service Operator 9420. With an IP relay pod, do you know how to use relay?
I'm sorry, no, I don't.
Oh, okay, I can explain it to you.
Yes, go ahead.
You're receiving a call from a person who is using a computer. The person will be typing, and I will voice the conversation to you.
Okay.
When you hear the words, go ahead, it is your turn to respond. Please speak more slowly and in the first person, because you are talking directly to the operator. I'm sorry, the person has hung up. Thank you. This is IP Relay Service Operator 9420. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Well, for the fourth time in this broadcast, someone has called in. Are you going to be taking off?
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for your time staying here.
Yeah, well, I'll be talking
to you. Okay. Yeah, just see if you've got any questions or whatever. We can set this up for you if you want.
Yes.
We've done it before.
Okay, thanks.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Peter. Yeah, you can just see how it's set up. And just the various audio inputs all being fed into one stream. Behringer, I think. We're looking at the audio mixing board that we're using here for the broadcast. It referred to as a Eurorack UB1202. This might be useful. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, excitement, but yeah, I could hear things. And it was music being played beside. I was actually hoping to get discussion or coverage of protests. So we had some very fortunate phone calls. Nothing lately. Kind of bummed. PM. Haven't had a dispatch. Now we know the phone works. We just got a phone call. I'm kind of curious. I wonder if those fools at CBS still have any efforts. No, they're now talking with Illinois in the Nevada game. They still got that same darn copy and paste email. Wow, they are just really, they have like no nuance. You're just looking, and they just, like, pasted it on. It's just... Hundreds of Chicago police escorted about 1,000 protesters of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq to a march in downtown rally today. They don't have any details. That's the only sentence that they have. We're still waiting for numbers. Unfortunately, it seemed like it was packed. It could be well more than 1,000. Police prepare for Iraq war protest down Mag Mile. Well, continuing coverage, let's see what else has been happening. This is interesting. More breaking news. Nope, no more breaking news. Sorry. Enemy Combatant Radio, Action Web Radio from Portland, San Diego.
I wonder if global is anything new.
I'm just grasping for straws here, folks.
You might want to have something kind of longer form. And maybe more technical based. I'm going to put in some more Churchill. Pacifism as pathology in the American left. This is a CD recorded by AK Press AK Press, the Waterhouse, the AK Press Waterhouse in Oakland, California, November 16th, 2001. Ward Churchill, whom a lot of people now know, and the remarks here, which,
Chicago Indie Media, you're on the air and being recorded. Go ahead, please. Hello? Hello, is anyone there? Hello? Going once? Hello? Hello? Okay.
Well, that was annoying. What to do? Well, anyway, yeah. Ward Churchill, as I was doing. So we'll listen to some CDs.
I'd like to thank you all for coming out to AK Press. Welcome. Tonight's speaker is Ward Churchill. I suspect he needs very little introduction. He's been a troublemaker for many years, activist, scholar. He's written several books, most of which are really great, and probably all of which you should buy and read, and they're all on sale out there. And actually, while we're doing the commercials, Mr. Churchill is also featured on this excellent new CD, which also has Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, Alexander Coburn, Christian Perrenny, some dude called Craig O'Hara, etc., which is also for sale in there. And before Ward starts, I just want to say that it is being recorded tonight for potential posterity, hopefully for a future AK CD release. So if you want to cough in the right places, laugh uproariously at the jokes, cheer in the right places, perhaps you too can have a slice of history. I mean, of course, you can also laugh in the wrong places, cough in opportune moments. You will also be recorded for history. You'll also be taken outside and shot, but... All right, please welcome Ward Churchill. Thank you.
C.O. Hosiju. Hello, my relatives. I bring you greeting from the Kituwa Band of Cherokees, my people, the Colorado chapter of the American Indian Movement, of which I'm a part, from Gwarthy Las, otherwise known as Leonard Peltier, who tonight as I speak to you, sits in a cage at a federal prison in Leavenworth, Kansas. Not for anything, anyone, including even his prosecutor at any point in the last 15 years, perhaps more, has been prepared to say they actually believed he did, but rather as a symbol of the arbitrary ability of the federal government of the United States to repress the legitimate aspirations to liberation of indigenous peoples within its claimed boundaries, right here in the good old USA. Having said that, I'd also like to say that I'm speaking for none of them tonight. I'm speaking as Ward Churchill, not as AIM, not as Cherokee, not as a spokesperson for Leonard Peltier, but just as a human being to human beings, straight up and to the issue. The event was billed, Pacifism as Pathology, which is the title of a book that I did in collaboration with Ed Mead and Mike Ryan. Now, I'm assuming that there's a good number of people in here who have already read the book. And I'm also aware that those of you who have not certainly can. As Ramsey pointed out, it's on sale right out there. Looks just like this. As you can tell, it's not a terribly large book, and so it's not a terribly long read. I therefore do not propose to recapitulate what it is verbatim that's in the book. You can follow the baseline arguments by reading the text. And there have been some events that have occurred since we originally planned this particular event. They occurred in September, on the 11th, as a matter of fact, which changes the context of a lot of what I might have said. In any event, I'm going to just go full bore in that particular direction, engage in a little challenge. What I want to do is basically line out an argument here as rapidly as possible and turn it into exchange. Comments, which do not extend to speeches. Okay. Q&A, spit wads, brick bats, whatever nonviolent things might be coming my way as a result of what it is that I might say. See where we end up. So, that's the general drill that's on hand. What is it that the citizenry of the United States and even its most progressive formations has engaged by way of applying even a break, much less bringing to a halt this pattern of wholesale criminality engaged in by its governor? And it's not simply this abstraction of criminal behavior or comportment. It's not simply a posture. It's not something that we sit there and say, well, that is wrong in some abstract moral sense. No, the nature of the criminality in which the United States engages, as Noam Chomsky and many others have copiously documented, translates into piles and piles and piles of rotting, stinking corpses all over the planet, everywhere but here. Yeah, these are real people. This is a real grinding misery. This is real burning flesh. This is real shredded babies. And not just a few. We're talking now on a scale of millions and perpetually. That's the direct commission and the indirect commission of the same kind of crime, which is made possible by the direct commission, is death by starvation, death by deprivation of medical attention, death by all manner of means, truncations of lifespan, people with 40-year longevity as an entire population, that degree of intensive impoverishment for the raking off, exploitation, whatever you want to call it, of the assets which should make their lives livable. That's the nature of the process, the structure of the reality, and what has been the response? Well, we have petition campaigns. We have marches. We have rallies. We read a lot of books. And some of us scribble quite a lot and publish more. Make sure the word is out there. Defy logic by announcing that we're speaking truth to power, as if power didn't know what it was doing. Somehow, we might wish to consider perhaps speaking to people once in a while, but to what purpose? Well, apparently, so diets can be changed. Okay, we can have more bicycle paths. We can have no smoking signs on every flat surface in California. We can bear moral witness and feel better about ourselves because we're enlightened and aware when we go home from the rally, which did absolutely nothing to change anything tangible in terms of the functioning of power. Has to go to a particular end. What I'm going to say here is that once that cycle has been completed, and it's been completed three times in my adult life, hey, the style show out there for the alternative or counterculture or whatever, they're clear back to tie-dye at this point. My God, those went out when I was in college, and now it's back, and elephant bells. Next thing you know, people are going to be, well, never mind. It's become a ritual form where once the list of finite options of the sort that I just talked about are exhausted, producing effect of utter ineffectuality, go back to the beginning and start it all over again. And when that fails, we go back, and there's been iteration after iteration after iteration after iteration of that throughout the 20th century on the part of the so-called radical opposition, progressive opposition, liberal opposition, almost all of it coming under a rubric of something called nonviolence. Now, before I get all off into the nature of my critique of this and start making comparisons to Merlin the Magician and reliance upon alchemy, that if we repeat the same failed experiment long enough, over and over again, eventually that lead will become gold. Before I get all off into that, let me point out a very important word on the cover of the book. It's a two-letter word. I'm not even going to be obscene here. As. It doesn't say pacifism is pathology. It says pacifism as pathology. And I think it's a fairly important distinction to make. There's nothing in pacifism. And I am, yes, I am going to conflate this articulation of nonviolent principles with pacifism. It's a little crude, but it'll work for purposes here tonight. Pacifism, and any doctrine that I'm aware of that will withstand scrutiny and is worthy of the name, holds that one shall not inflict violence. It says nothing about one will not absorb it. It says nothing about pacifism is synonymous with avoidance of risk. It says nothing about pacifism is synonymous with avoidance of sacrifice, struggle. There have been pacifists in a tradition of opposition in the United States ever since I was old enough to be aware of it. There was a guy by the name of Norman Morrison, who was a practicing Quaker. Clear back in 1965, when I was still in high school, went down to the Pentagon to protest what they were setting out to do in Vietnam, introducing maneuver battalions at Da Nang. Poured a can of gasoline over his head, struck a match. Got attention for about 4 days. Now, I absolutely disagree with suicide as a political tactic in almost any instance you can name. I think Norman Morrison was a person with enough talent and enough commitment that he could have had an impact if he had extended his life, but he made that choice. I can disagree with the politic of it. I can disagree with the tactic, but the one thing I cannot do is suggest that Norman Morrison avoided risk, that Norman Morrison avoided sacrifice, that Norman Morrison did not have the courage of his convictions. He most certainly did. And there are others, and less extreme, although several examples of that sort from the Vietnam period I could pull up. But at a level of struggle and sacrifice in nonviolent terms, you'd have to look at the Berrigans who courted imprisonment. Absolute defiance, didn't stay safe for a moment. And again, I can run down other examples. I can run them down all night if you want. People I've worked with, people I know about. In terms of people I work with, Shara Griffith from Greenpeace, who established a peace camp that physically interposed that group of people between federal marshals and my own group at Yellow Thunder Camp occupation in the early 1980s. And there was substantial risk involved in that, because those guys were coming, and what they had in mind to do was something like Waco. And it worked. Had it just been the Indians, and had it just been the armed struggle, well, you had had a bloodbath or one sort or another, probably wouldn't have worked out like Waco, because we were better prepared for what it was that was coming, apparently, than the people were there. We were not housed in a structure that was subject to being torched and everybody inside burned alive. So it would have played out a little bit different, but by virtue of the fact of a bunch of little white kids, and that's really what it came down to in the minds of the marshal, we're not going to drive an armored personnel carrier over the top of a bunch of kids who've got well-connected and fluent parents who might just get us in a bunch of trouble. So it worked. It worked on the basis of incurring the risk. But that's not how it usually works. It's not how it usually works. It works by way of a certain sort of collaboration with the functioning of power. Because it's well understood that there are certain lines of activity which are not only condoned by the elites, but are considered necessary to demonstrate that this is a functioning democracy, all evidence to the contrary notwithstanding. things having to do with expression of political speech, so long as you do it in a way that's approved and accepted, doesn't actually disrupt anything. If you won't do it, they'll come down and ask you to organize it and offer you a grant for the purpose. And that reality goes into the definition of the movement of what actually constitutes violence, if you think about it. Consider Seattle. Y'all aware of Seattle, the WTO demonstrations that occurred there? And you aware that the big to-do among the so-called nonviolent folk was that there were a bunch of youngsters running around wearing black masks and such, called themselves, I think, the Black Bloc. Anybody ever heard of them? The Black Bloc was being horribly violent. They were breaking the windows in Starbucks coffee houses. Yeah. And so pristine and pure were the advocates of nonviolence in the face of this that people who could never in their wildest imaginings lift a hand to prevent a police officer from doing a damn thing linked arms, supplanted the cops, and manhandled the black blockers away from the windows protecting the corporate property. True story. True story. It's on videotape. Battle of Seattle. Get it out. Look at these brave guys defending Starbucks from the violence of a broken window when they were ostensibly there to protest a corporate ravage of the third world that was translating into hundreds of thousands and even millions of deaths. And if you can't see the contradiction in that, you're not looking. At two levels. One, the idea that a personal posture can be assumed that precludes the violence of the context. And the context is violent, that's why you're there. So it's by no means, no matter what you do, going to be a nonviolent context. Get used to it. What I'm talking about in the third world is going to go on every minute of every protest. They're supposedly the reasons for the protests. And the cops are wearing those guns in their hips and carrying that chemical mace and that pepper gas, that spray, and those other accoutrements of repression for a reason. You don't make them nonviolent by acquiescing. The violence is systemic and it remains there. Your acquiescence simply perpetuates it. That's at the philosophical level, and at the practical level, the idea that somebody who would not oppose a police officer in the process of beating someone half to death with a riot baton could then manhandle a black blocker away from a window kind of speaks for itself. That contradiction has already been remarked. But then the upshot comes on the websites of the movement to do in the aftermath of Seattle. I have one in particular. I won't name the name of the individual, and I doubt that it was a real name that was posted with it anyway, thanking the Black Bloc a lot. Sarcasm dripping. Thanks a lot, guys, for turning Seattle into a fascist state for the duration of your visit here. So let's see. These guys got off the buses from Eugene or wherever it was they were from, okay? And all of a sudden, the police chief and the mayor both exhibiting visible shock, horrified that these guys were here, and knowing they had to take drastic measures to prevent the breaking of Starbucks windows, ran out and bought themselves a SWAT team, a couple armored personnel carriers, a whole inventory of tear gas, yeah, got everybody trained and equipped and coordinated to get out there in the street. That all happened in about 28 minutes, and then, yeah, comes around somehow or another to the idea, and it's a good old American idea. It's kind of like when H. Rapp Brown made reference to violence being American as a cherry pie, yeah? So is the notion of blaming the victim. Victims of fascism somehow or another become responsible for the fact of the fascism itself. Damn Jews. Hadn't been for them, Nazis wouldn't have exterminated them all. Yeah. Maybe you can find a logical defensibility to such propositions, but I can't. Colin Powell, and actually I saw him make this comment on CNN, which I'm a junkie, I get all kinds of good sound bites out of that thing. Yeah, Colin's standing there saying, as a joke, you know, I'm running out of enemies. I just can't find any more enemies for us to go after. This about, I don't know, a year ago. Yeah. As a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, one of the orchestrators of the My Lai Massacre cover-up, which is what propelled his career, and present Secretary of State presiding over a Holocaust out there in the Third World. This was his idea of coming forth with a little levity. But they're quoting him like this is serious. Like the brass is really running out of targets and demons. And then they come up with an example. Bush's Star War package is going forward to Congress, where it could have been expected to meet stiff resistance, meaning they were going to talk about it a lot. And it was going to pass anyway. They actually say this. And clearly it wouldn't. You know, the preponderance of it would have been, in the end, passed anyway. But all of that's over now because of September 11th. I read it, I swear, three times, trying to find out what it was that was over. Those people out there who are literally sitting in hovels starving to death, watching their children die of malnutrition and exposure in the masses are supposed to be, apparently, thrilled that we've actually gotten to the point in this country through, no doubt, our enlightened pressure by nonviolent tactics to where we can actually stimulate a debate about something that's going to pass anyway in the Congress. And that they should wait contentedly, dying the entire time in absolute misery, while we dither our way through to the point where we can find a pill that we can take that will provide us a painless solution while preserving privilege. Ooh. But if someone has a better means of explaining what is the expectation is that's being pushed off on these people, I would really like, in the aftermath of what it is that I'm saying here, to hear about it. I'm subject to rearticulation every once in a while. Someone can give me a better idea, but I haven't come up with a better explanation of what the expectation implicit in that remark might have been. What is it? It was over now. What we have now is a clarification. And the clarification is that if you're serious about actually affecting change, and you're serious about the idea that international law should be binding, and you're serious about the conception that killing masses of other people and starving their babies to death, as 500,000 Iraqi children have been starved to death in non-wartime conditions over the past 10 years without a murmur of protest worthy of the name in this country, then you're going to have to understand that in a relative position of disempowerment, such as we are, there's no way that what we call a movement or the opposition or anything else can actually go toe-to-toe with the federal government and compel it to do anything at this point. Relatively disempowered in an extreme form as we are now, we do not foreclose any tactical options available to us. None. That's insane and absurd, particularly on the basis of making it a morally superior argument to do so. As to the moral superiority of bearing moral witnesses, while babies die, decade in, decade out, I can find no morality whatsoever. But I can find self-interest, I can find self-indulgence, and I find it disgusting to an extreme degree to have that peddled as a morally superior position to people who, in the face of being on the receiving end of that, try to find some means of attracting attention or at least strike back. At least strike back. The old thing about if I'm going to die, which we all will, I would much rather do so on my feet than on my knees. It's kind of binding here. At least those who respond in kind to the rules imposed have the dignity of dying on their own terms, rather than those that are imposed by a system, and frankly the people in the system who do not consider them as valuable as the toilet paper upon which they wipe their ass. We do not foreclose on any tactical options available to us. We do not have a moral prerogative to foreclose as a moral principle any tactical option available to us in the face of what it is that's actually going on out there, if not here. But you can find it here as well. What it is that's happening in the Third World happens in every barrio, every migrant camp, every inner city, every Indian reservation in this country. And it doesn't just restrict itself to communities of color. You can find it in Appalachia as well. It's both a racial ethnic issue and a class issue, by a structure that consigns people to the dregs of misery. This is a concomitant of doing business and wishes to extrapolate itself in predatory fashion in an even more virulent form upon the remainder of the planet. If there were a serious movement, a serious opposition in this country, which could be relied upon to do its level best to effect fundamental change in this country, one could assume that those in the third world who are bearing the brunt of what it is that's happening might be in a position where they could say, we could give it some more time. But such a movement does not presently exist for the reasons that I've already indicated. We have to ask ourselves now what it would be that would be required to create such a movement. Well, the first is a consciousness of what it is that I'm talking about, the non-foreclosure of options. What I'm not doing is making an argument here that everybody should run out and get yourself some Molotov cocktails, get yourself a piece, snipe at the cops, do all those silly things that they are always accusing us of being about doing when we make these kinds of articulations. No, I am saying get yourself intellectually, psychologically prepared. Get yourself equipped, get yourself trained, have available the option to engage in a reflexive and flexible manner to whatever the situation is that presents itself so that you can engage in a reasonable and rational analysis of what it is that might work in any given instance. I believe in armed struggle. I have engaged in armed struggle over the last 20 years on repeated occasions. With that belief in hand and with that experience in hand, my own praxis, probably 95% of it has been of the nature of what would be called nonviolent. I've engaged in petition campaigns. I engage in marches. I engage in protests of various sorts. I engage in boycotts. I engage in all those lines of activity, and I do not restrict myself to that. Thank you very much. In fact, my refusal to restrict myself to that and that of other people with whom I work, their refusal in common with my own, often adds a measure of credibility to the other modes of protest that would otherwise be absent. And I'm not telling people who have moral compunctions against engaging in armed struggle that they need to violate those compunctions, but what you have to do is manifest solidarity rather than condemnation and repudiation for those who don't share those principles. We must operate on a basis of mutual respect. For most people, the question of violence and nonviolence, however, is not a matter of principle. Primarily, the question of nonviolence as opposed to violence is a tactical consideration, the question of what works. What works in any given situation? What is most likely to work? For which investment can you get the most return in capitalist terms? That's a language they understand. The other language is a language they understand as well. They've ultimately exempted themselves, as they convinced the body politic that it had a right to exempt itself from receiving what it is that is dished out by the system. That was what the shock and the ramifications were of 9-1-1. We need to do a little more careful assessment of what it is that that was about. I might not agree that it was the most effective tactic that could have been undertaken at that particular point, but I frankly, for the life of me, can't figure out another, much less a better one, people in Afghanistan or Iraq could have engaged. It's not exactly like they have a military parity with the United States. There's 1.5 million dead in Iraq and there's 1 million dead in Afghanistan. How much longer were they supposed to be non-responsive? I've had people debate this with me. Brian Wilson, another whose courage cannot be questioned, chained himself to a railroad track in front of an ordnance depot to stop a flow of arms that was going to the Contra War, as I recall, was run over by the locomotive, got right back up and said the same thing he said before. He tells me his method would be to starve the institutional structure, deny it the transfusions of cash it requires vampire-like in order to exist. On 9-1-1, 19 guys equipped with $30 worth of box cutters did $100 billion, and the count is increasing, dollars worth of damage structurally to the economy of the United States. That was my initial estimate of how much that was going to ripple out to cost. I think I was low. In other words, 19 guys with $30 worth of box cutters did more bleeding of the system in the terms of value that it understands than every boycott and every march and every campaign that we've undertaken since Vietnam. And they did it in about 20 minutes. Now, you do your own calculus on this and figure out whether or not, irrespective of whether they had other options available, it was an effective tactic. In their terms, it had to be. And understand, they are not occupying the privileged positions that we occupy, and understand as well, even to make a decision as to what fashion you're going to represent yourself with in public spaces or whether or not you're going to change your dialect or privileges. People who are in starvation conditions don't have the option of making determinations what the proper diet might be, whether I'm going to be a macrobiotic, a vegetarian, whether I'm going to subsist entirely on meat or just rice. No, we don't get these choices. See, this is a privileged lot. We're all privileged, every one of us. And the non-privileged make certain choices according to sets of understandings and imperatives that we don't happen to necessarily share. And we got to get used to that, too, on the basis of that exercise of mutual respect. Try to understand where it is they're coming from. In the process, we might just learn something in a less abstract way than we've been tending to assimilate thus far. You understand? Actually, at that point, other than to make the observation, the people who wanted to make the argument that the other route, that route of repeating the same failed experiments over and over again on the basis of some presumption of personal moral purity, and that they are, in fact, being more effective in the long run than people who take direct action of the sorts that occurred in 9-1-1, and I'm not suggesting that that need be repeated, are functioning in the level of absolute duplicity is one possibility, or to cut them more slack, I suppose, on the basis of a delusional self-awareness. Delusional in terms of self, which then precipitates a delusional understanding of the reality they inhabit and engage. And to be delusional is to be curable, but it is not to be in a position of making a determination of the tactical responses appropriate to people who are not. Thank you. With that all said, I think the position that I wanted to take has been pretty well lined out. And with you thus stimulated to reply in kind or in contrary fashion, I think I'll stop impersonating a talking head up here. Step.
Chicago in the media, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to let everyone know that we're broadcasting you on WZRD 88.3 FM.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
I was going to wrap up the CD with Ward Churchill. We're coming to you from the trenches. Hello to our listeners on WZRD 88.3 FM, Chicago's Northside Radio out of Northeastern Illinois University, as well as our worldwide audience on the internet at chicago.indymedia.org, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A. We're coming to you from the trenches. This is Chicago Indie Media's coverage of protests and events in Chicago and worldwide today, March 19th, 2005, Saturday. The date marks the second anniversary of the escalation of the war in Iraq. And this radio broadcast is a special extended edition of From the Trenches, the radio project of the Chicago Independent Media Center, part of the growing network of independent media centers that span the globe. My name is Mitchell Stripinchik. We're coming to you with a phone call. Excuse me a moment.
Chicago Indie Media, you're on the air and being recorded. Go ahead, please.
Hello, the person is calling you through Sprint Relay Online. This is CA6017. Have you received an internet relay call before?
I've received a number of internet relay calls in the day today, yes.
The person who has called has hung up.
Okay.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Sure. Bye.
That's like, what, the sixth time that that's happened? Yeah, I don't know if this is probably more a hoax than anything else in which people set up internet relay calls just to fill the time. But we haven't gotten a call in, well, it's 4:48 p.m. now according to time here. and we haven't gotten a phone call, aside from that last call from WZRD, in probably nearly an hour. Just to recapitulate about the events and protests that have been taking place in Chicago. And by the way, if people would like to call in with discussion, comment, points, they're welcome to call into the Chicago Indie Media office phone line. The phone number is 773-384-8544. Again, 773-384-8544. Or imc-chicago@indiemedia.org is our email address if people would like to contact us by email. Indie Media is spelled I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A. You can also contact us by America Online Instant Messenger. We're logged on right now. The username to use to contact us is Chicago IMC for the Chicago Independent Media Center. We've had, from about 6 a.m. this morning, perhaps slightly earlier, we've had just to lay the scene as far as what's happened. There have been at least 10 marches that we know of that would have taken place of varying sizes across the city. North side, south side, efforts in downtown, two marches from the south side, at least two in the north side. We'll continue the discussion in a moment.
Chicago Indie Media, you're on the air and being recorded. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mitchell. It's John Groot.
Hey, John. What's new?
I'm at home. Everything went well.
Mm-hmm.
I have good news to report. I did get footage of Andy Thayer being arrested.
Okay. He actually called us from the paddy wagon.
He did?
Yeah. We talked to him for about 10 minutes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Save that, because we will want that.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm in the process of trying to get it to the TV stations. Two TV stations gave us cards that they wanted. I'm not sure exactly how to get it to them, but I do want to upload it to and have it available on the site, maybe
okay.
even tonight, if that's
okay.
possible.
To talk about the technical details of that, I've been in touch with various technical staff. It might be possible, but there have been some difficulties, and actually the problem with regards to past uploads of video that have been, and not just video, but actually audio as well. I've been getting complaints from the Radio Collective with regards to uploading reasonably large size files. The problem actually has to do with the software itself.
Uh-huh.
It does not handle loads very well.
I see.
So, and the only way to get around that, I was told of two solutions, one of which was very technically complicated, another which was much simpler, change the software that we're using. We may do that later on down the road, but it's not something that we can do very quickly.
Right. Well, what I'm going to do, Mitchell, is I'm going to upload it to my own server. And
okay.
If you're available later to insert it into the into
as
whatever
a link.
Center panel is going on,
mm-hmm.
then I'll let you have the address.
Okay. Sounds great. Yeah, we can totally do that.
It's really cool. Andy's talking on the on his little PA system. The sergeants actually came to take him down.
Wow.
And they come around in front of him, grab him. He protests. They drag him back. Five cops jump on him. They take him down. And then I pan down, and Reverend Jake starts a prayer right in front of me.
Huh, impressive.
So it's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah.
I'll get it uploaded as soon as I can.
Yeah, upload it, and then we'll just attach the link. Actually, we're not hearing you all that well. There might be a low battery on this end. Can you just hang up for a moment and then call back in just a second?
Sure.
Yeah, hold on a second. Call back.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so we'll use the other side of the battery this time. Chicago Indie Media coverage. John Groot is a videographer. Part of the Video Collective of Chicago Indie Media. If people have video footage that they'd like to share, contact the Chicago Indie Media Video Collective. You can call us here at 773-384-8544. You can also email imc-chicago@indiemedia.org, and we can put you in touch with people who make video, including a TV show that airs on CAN TV called Chicago Independent Television. Some episodes are available on the website now. Made 8 and soon to be 9 episodes, and this might be episode 10. It's been, for about the past year, we tried to make monthly episodes, and John should be calling back in a moment, and we patiently wait. 4:53 p.m. Weather is cloudy, more or less the same. There he is now.
Hello?
Hello, a person is calling you through Sprint Relay Online. I'm sorry, the person has just hung up.
Okay, thank you.
I'll try again. There we go. True to form.
Chicago Indie Media.
I'm back.
Welcome.
Are you still on the air?
Yeah, I am.
How about that?
Yeah, you can listen in if you want. I've archived the entire thing. Now, approaching 9 hours of stuff.
Oh, man.
And the website has all of the dispatches that I've received. So tell me about, tell me about your day. What happened?
I started out with my wife and my 15-month-old daughter at Okun, Michigan at 11 o'clock this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought our daughter with because we weren't sure, you know, if we got blockaded in and surrounded by police and I had key footage, maybe like what I got here, that we would use my daughter as a mule to take the footage out. You know, she's very angry, Mitchell.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she, for a 16-month-old girl, she's really angry. She doesn't
want to I don't want to be in a locked room with her, of course.
Yeah, you don't want to get her on her bad side, and she doesn't want to be drafted.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's out there fighting the good fight.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So what happened is Andy got arrested, then they forced us to go march on Oak, and until they got us to Dearborn, and then we went south as far as Delaware, and then we stopped. And at that point, they were just stalling to try to regroup their forces around us.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some fear that the same thing would happen as happened in 2003, that they would just surround us and start arresting us.
Right.
The protest organizers, Andy being missing at this point, other people stepped in, and they negotiated with the police. Finally, an agreement was struck to go down Dearborn. And it was very much like last year going down Clark. We got to Federal Plaza. We had a nice rally. I saw Darth Vader. He was doing some stand-ups for the Chicago Indie Media Video Collective. And by the way, if anyone's still listening and has footage of this march or any of the activities today, please get a hold of Chicago Indie Media and let us have a copy of that footage, because we will use it in our various shows and possibly on the website.
Yeah, I've been plugging the efforts of the Video Collective as well.
Good deal. Thank you very much.
Very welcome.
So, yeah, that's about it. Now we're done, and tonight I'm still going to the Cynthia McKinney event down in Hyde Park. I'm going to shoot parts of that. So, as far as uploading, I won't be doing it until after that. How late will you be up tonight?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure exactly what I might do. I'm scheduled to be on until at least 6 p.m., unless I get word otherwise, because I have you heard anything regarding Andy Thayer still being in jail?
I don't know a thing about
that. Okay, because I've been trying to get a hold of people to find out more information, nothing yet. So as far as I know, he's still in jail. Or if he has been released, there's been no details about that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and or else other people have been arrested. We've got word about as many as 8 people who have been arrested. But no details are as yet forthcoming. Hmm?
That's not too bad.
Yeah. Last year we had about 3 by my count.
Oh, so we're up from last year.
We're up from last year.
Well, maybe it's not our personal best. Our personal best would be over 500.
Yeah. Quite. Well, in any event, instant messages just come our way.
Well, great. You know, I'm going to get back to trying to compress this, and I'm possibly going to be getting it to the TV stations. I will be in touch with you. Are you going home after this?
I imagine so, unless something extreme happens to me. So if you don't try to reach me here, just call me at home.
I'll try that.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for all you do over there.
Yeah, thanks for I'm glad that you were able to get out safe and sound and that you've got footage.
Well, you knew I would.
Oh, yeah, totally. Okay.
It was fun. It was like Christmas for me. I lived with it, you know.
It's looking a whole lot like Christmas.
It is.
Indeed. Well, my friend, do call back later, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was John giving his update, and yeah, I should actually hang up the phone. That would be nice. So, in any event, a couple of interesting dispatches arrived. Gentleman from Kentucky offers an email for there have been some youth and militarization efforts. There's a very excellent website called militaryfreezone.org, which I had received via AOL Instant Messenger. Under the No Child Left